for the moment, then you can get an understanding with all that we have learned so far in string theory by putting it together. You can get an understanding of the black hole information paradox. There are some more things we can learn by understanding that paradox. Those we are just beginning to understand, and I'll give you a short summary of where we are on that story. So here's this work we've done over many years with my students and postdocs, and there's work by many other groups, and some of those names are listed here. Okay, so roughly speaking, the problems with black holes can be split into these three titles for the purpose of what I'm going to say. We used to have at least the entropy puzzle. You have an area entropy A over 4G for the black hole, and it really corresponds to a counter state for the black hole. I know string theory in the mid-90s had some success with this, because starting with the work of Suskind, Ashok Sen, Strom Devafa, and so on, one understood that at least for supersymmetric black holes, you can count states, and you find that count of states is equal to this horizon area that you get. So it does look like the entropy problem we do understand, this funny kind of entropy coming from the area, does correspond to some kind of a counting of states. Surprisingly, however, even though you could count states, it didn't solve the second problem, which is the information paradox. How can the Hawking radiation quanta carry out the information of the hole? In some sense, this is an even more serious problem, because if you can't solve this, then you can't have quantum mechanics and GR at the same time. And what I'm going to come and tell you is that the first world paradigm that we seem to find by looking at the states in string theory will give us the following picture. This is a live cartoon of the black hole. Anything you throw into the black hole goes to the center because of the way the light cones are. And so if you draw a region around the horizon, the state in there is the value. So that's where all the problem comes from. I'm going to show you that in some detail just to review the information paradox. But what you will find is if you go back to the same state that we were counting for black holes, for the supersymmetric black hole, then for near supersymmetric and so on, that's the way the story went for counting. Now we do the same story with the same states, but try to ask a more detailed question, what do those states actually look like? So when this counting was done, it was a slightly indirect argument. You can go to one value of the coupling and estimate them, but we actually want to know, at the coupling where they make black holes, can we actually say what the states look like? And it turns out the states actually do not squeeze all the data to a point. They actually shut up to a size, which is of the order of the horizon size. So if you try to draw a boundary, a little ball around here, it actually does contain data about the state. So this is the main thing I'll be showing you. I'll actually show you how to take states in theory. You can actually now construct using all the tools of string theory what they look like, and they will look like this. And so this will basically take away the information paradox. I want to separate the paradox, the problem of the information paradox from this, what I call the infall problem, which is a question people often ask, what does an infalling observer feel? And I'll tell you, we have some preliminary results about that, so I'll try to say something about the dynamical issue, what happens when something collapses, or what happens when somebody's falling in. I did want to mention that those are questions that are not directly the same as the one for the information paradox. Here you simply have to show that there is some flaw in the argument which Hawking used to show that information doesn't come out. I'll go through that in some detail, but the flaw would be that in fact the state near the horizon would turn out to not be the vacuum state. So I have to actually show you that by constructing states, data goes all the way to the location that you have considered the horizon. Was there a question?
I'm just confused how you can separate, because you're saying that if you go inside the horizon, you don't find vacuum. But then you're saying that maybe an observer falling in won't notice the difference.
So no, I'm not trying to say that it won't fall in. We actually have to compute exactly what he will see. But basically what happens is an observer falling in is something who's typically thought to be heavy. Heavy means his mass is bigger than kT. And he falls in over a crossing time. And that's a very different problem from asking what do outgoing quanta of energy order kT feel over the long Hawking evaporation time. So there are many, there can be some kind of degrees of freedom in here which are sparse enough or light enough, you see from the construction how it comes out, where you know if you fall through it very quickly with high energy, things look almost the same. But on the other hand, the important thing is once the state here is not the vacuum, at least the original argument of Hawking which was saying the pairs come out in this fashion, you can no longer make that argument. That's what I'm going to tell you. Okay, so this is what I'm going to do. First, I'll spend some time in talking about what is the information paradox, in case not everybody is completely familiar with that. Also help me to focus on the parts I want. Here the results in the first poll, I'll summarize some of the results we have. In string theory, you start to make black holes which are extremal, mass equal to charge. You can make black holes by putting two different kinds of charges together. All the objects in string theory carry charge. You can put two kinds of charges, three kinds of charges, four kinds of charges. So for those extremal black holes, there are quite a few results known. I'll tell you about those. A few results about non-extremal states are known. And here, the state of the art of where we are can be summarized by the following. We can now take one family of states of the non-extremal black hole, so near-extremal black hole of extremality. We can construct their interior completely inside, in string theory, to show what it looks like inside the horizon. There is no horizon, there's a region in there, we can show you what it is. We can see Hawking radiation emerge from that and come out. And you can see how the information is being carried out, where it's coming out, you can see everything. It's a very non-generic family of states, so particularly a family of states carrying very high rotation. I know, but we are starting to work from there to a state with lower rotation, so we've written a couple of papers on that. But just to focus on this, we'll show you one non-generic state, non-extremal, emits radiation. It will show you that is the radiation which you should call Hawking radiation for this particular non-generic state. Every state radiates a little bit differently. This particular non-generic state radiates its own radiation. Whatever radiation was expected, Hawking radiation was expected for this state, you'll see it coming out completely unitarily. You'll see exactly where it comes out, how it comes out. Ask anything you want about it. It carries the information. At the end, I'll come back and talk about dynamical questions which we are working on these days. I'll try to say a little bit about what happens when a shell collapses to its horizon. Try to do something about what an infrared observer actually sees. And then, this you can probably ask me later because I won't have time in the talk at all. Don't apply the ideas we learn here to cosmology because there also you get very dense matter. So I think non-trivial you learn about quantum gravity here really should have nice implications for the very, very early universe. Okay, so let's just begin with the information paradox. I put a review of this written for our students in the summer school there. So just take the pictures from that review. This is the first pass you make at this. You take a large cloud of gas or dust, collapse under its own gravity. You think it makes a black hole, everything goes in here. But then you get pair creation near the horizon because there's no data here. This guy is when the black hole is gone, you have this stuff here. Okay, this doesn't have any information. So that's the first pass of what is the information problem. This guy doesn't have information about this guy. Okay, so now in a little bit more detail, let's just draw a schematic diagram where I've drawn a radial coordinate here. This is going towards r equals infinity. This is the horizon r equals 2m. That's 0. This is a schematic diagram, not the Penrose diagram. It just helps me to see how things are. So if I draw a space-like slice here, far out of the space-like slice is time equal to constant. You can see that. Inside the horizon, it's actually r equal to constant, which is a space-like slice. So I should, if I want to make a complete space-like slice, I'd take something like this and join to something like r equal to constant. You can do that, you can join smoothly across. But if you take a later t equal to constant slice to get some kind of time evolution, you join to r equal to constant, which will be a longer r equal to constant slice, which will join up here. So even though the actual Schwarzschild geometry looks to be time independent, once you start slicing it by space-like slices, cutting across both outside and inside the horizon, the time-independent part is only the outside part, you'll see that the actual geometry in any slicing will be time-dependent. And in that case, you always get part of the creation because you cannot choose a vacuum function on any initial slice, which will actually stay the same on later slices. So this is what happens. If you take a vacuum or some initial slice which straddles the horizon half inside and half outside, as the slice evolves, it gets stretched. Up to this point, it has just changed in wave number, but after some time, the stretching is actually pretty nonlinear. So you know, it gets stretched out like this. And if you try to write down what this wave function is telling you for any vacuum mode, at this point, you see it actually is not the vacuum anymore. You get a pair of particles, call them B on the outer part of the slice, C on the inner part, and you get correlated pairs of particles. So as long as this region is sort of like the vacuum here, this is a vacuum region of space-time, any evolution is forced to make these particle pairs. The important thing about that, of course, is the entangled nature of the state. If you write out the state there, it's exponential of B and C on the vacuum of B and C. So you can have either no particles on either side, or one particle on either side, or two particles on either side, and so on. And so that's what the state looks like. So this particle pairs, how many particles are here, is connected to how many particles are here. A later mode makes particles here and here. So how many particles are here are connected to how many particles are here. This, of course, well known to all people who work in gravity. The important problem which happens now is, of course, the following. These guys are now entangled, and because they are entangled, the state is of this part being entangled with this, this particle is entangled with this, And so after time, a lot of particles are entangled, and the black hole is getting smaller as the radiation happens, and that's okay up to here, except when the black hole is completely gone, you have a state which is left entangled with nothing, and if you're entangled with nothing, then you have no quantum mechanics, because quantum mechanics, it's okay for a state to be entangled between different regions, but you can't be entangled with nothing unless you have a density matrix. So that's where the problem is. So let's just see how severe the problem is. Problem is very severe because state is basically of this form. You also have cross 2 and 2 cross 2 plus 3 cross 3. So just get the essence of the state from here. Let's say no excitations in either inside or outside pair, or one excitation in each pair. If you actually wanted to get unitarity, you would need the state outside and the state inside to be factored. It would be something like 0 plus 1 times 0 plus 1, not like 0 tensor 0 plus 1 tensor 1. But the point is, this state is not close to this state. We just slightly change the numbers here to, let's say, 1.1 and 0.9 or something. It doesn't make it significantly less entangled. So this is the important point I want to note from here. You need an order unity change in the state of the wave function, of which you're evolving from the vacuum, in order to solve the problem. Sometimes people think that a very small, delicate change somewhere in the Hawking radiation will solve your problem. If it was that easy, maybe you wouldn't worry about the paradox so much. You really need an order unity change in the natural evolution of wave functional modes on this completely smooth horizon, and that is in fact what's going to be serious. So anyways, this is a summarized in order unity change, and in fact in order unity change, and there's no data here, you have a vacuum here. And so in fact, if you summarize all this, this is what I've done, that node which I mentioned there, you can sort of make into sort of a Hawking theorem, just Hawking old argument here, that if all quantum gravity effects are confined within a bounded distance, which you choose once for all, like Planck and the string length or something, and they fall off like exponentially by high power outside that, and you need this for technical reasons to really make it to a theorem, but the vacuum is unique, then you will have information loss. I really haven't told you anything new here. This is just the Hawking argument, but you can really make it very, very precise, and you know, given things which we normally like to assume, the bounded effects of quantum gravity and units of the vacuum, you will have information loss, and the question is, can you ever beat this? If you don't beat this, then string theory is also gone, because it normally assumes it's a nice unitary theory of quantum gravity. So what do the fuzzball people have to come and say about this? As I was saying, the fuzzball picture would be quite different. So they would be saying that, well, here the state was this vacuum O. If you go near the boundary here on this fuzzball, you'd say this data here doesn't sit at the origin. It sort of goes all over and fuzzes over here in some awful quantum way. But now if you look at the state in this region, it's some other state psi, which is nowhere close to the vacuum. How can this ever happen? Normally the reason we thought this could never happen, the state here was the vacuum, is that we thought that the quantum gravity effect should be, if not absolutely at a point, within Planck length of this central point r equal to 0. And why do we think that distance of quantum gravity effect should be order np? Well, if we take g, h bar, and c, the natural units of length you get is Planck length. But that's not exactly what can happen, because something else can happen too. If you want to make a black hole, you have to put a large number n of particles together. And so just on grounds of units, it's certainly true if you collide two gravitons very hard, the relevant length scales like quantum gravity starts to be Planck length. But if you have a large number of particles involved, you've got to ask yourself the question whether the relevant scales of non-locality are Planck length or some power of n times Planck length. What we're going to see is that in fact this is what happens from string theory, and in fact the range would be such that the effects go all the way up to a distance which is of order the horizon scale. So this is what I want to show you by the explicit construction.
In this description, are you implying that the latency and this fuzzball will be a way to make local duration measurements with any where the surface is?
Okay, let's postpone the question to when I make the construction. Okay. And you will see that. What you'll see is depend on the measurements. It will be a little bit like the air in this room. If you want to see what the molecules are doing somewhere in some region, with enough effort, you can find out exactly where they are.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. But it will take more time. So if you do a quick observation, like just send a bullet through the room, it doesn't notice much about the details of where the air is. It will just give an effective viscosity and be done. But if you really want to see the details, they are all there. Absolutely. They are all there. But this was just going back to the question of the infalling observer. If you fall in too fast, you know, they may look identical. Yeah.
What do you mean with it's made of a large number of quantum units produced by or by counting?
Okay, so right now it was rough, but produced by means, yes, you have to put a certain amount of mass in there. So if you actually want to make it in string theory, you'll be throwing in some strings, brains, or whatever, right? So when we start with extremal black holes, it's very precise. So an extremal black hole is made with certain charges. I will actually count those charges And I said if we make a black hole, let's say two kinds of charges, let's say N1 units of the first charge, N2 units of the second, then what you will get is you will get N1 times N2 to the power 1/3. And it's exactly what we're going to come here, and that exactly is what we will learn at the scale attack from. So it's quite precise. This is very interesting because this is the first pass, but yes, it'll be more precise when you see what you're doing. So there's the number of brains which actually make up the art. Okay, so let's start with extremer holes, because as you know, in string theory, we typically start with the extremer holes and then try to come towards near extremer holes, and then we just extrapolate to all the way towards neutral holes. If things are making quantitative sense all the way to neutral holes, we just assume it's okay, because we can't do too much better than that. But so far, from whatever we have learned before, even the story with entropy, if you just naively extrapolate what you're seeing for extremer and near extremer, it sort of seems okay. So I do pretty much the same thing. Let me start with extremer holes. So the way you do that is you take some strings or brains or something and make some kind of a bound state. So at weak coupling, suppose you had some 1,000 brains of one kind, 1,000 strings of the other kind, you put them together, you made a bound state. You might have thought it will have size like Planck length. But that's just at weak coupling. You haven't made a black hole if you haven't taken the gravity to be strong enough to actually make your black hole. Now in string theory, the coupling is actually a tunable parameter. So you can make the coupling, it's like a modulus. You can make it weak or you can make it strong. It sometimes helps you to understand the states in string theory. So start with it being weak coupling, and then think of it as strong coupling. Now the usual picture that people used to have is at weak coupling, you just see the strings and brains, some Planck-sized scale mass sitting there. At strong coupling, it will make you a black hole. If this one has mass equal to charge, because we're taking supersymmetric states, what you will get is a black hole with mass equal to charge, which is an extremal black hole. And how does that look? Flat space far away, then an infinite throat, then a horizon, a region inside the horizon, and a singularity in there. So that's the typical cartoon model I just used for the extremal black hole, the extremal Rathenostrum black hole. You can write a Pendle's diagram, but I won't bother. I'll just show it to you as a cartoon like this. But this is not what actually happens. This is what people thought in the early days of string theory. They counted states here, which you can count by knowing string theory. Then you say you go to strong coupling because supersymmetric, number of states don't change. But here you can measure the horizon area. And in fact, you got an agreement of this Bekenstein entropy from here with this count of states. So that was the counting story done in the mid-90s. Ashok Sen and then Stromny operated for the three-charge black hole and so on. But in fact, when we actually start looking at what the states are doing, which is the part I want to talk about, when you increase the coupling, this guy doesn't go here. What happens is these guys actually start swelling up with the coupling. And in fact, the way they swell up, the size of this complex is always this power of n times Planck length. And if you try to see what kind of situation produced on the gravity side, you still get flat space far away. Then you get a throat which is long but not infinite. And then actually caps off before ever making the horizon. And there's some mess out here, which depends on which state of this system you actually took. So if you have a large number of brains, you have the Bekenstein entropy, this e to the s number of states. Which of the states you took, the details are in this mess, and those details will show up here. And so now, of course, if you have this, there's no information if something falls in here, it messes up and the data can come out. But in fact, you can see there's been quite a large change here, because the entire region inside the horizon, which was a macroscopic region of size 3 kilometers if you wanted, has gotten completely replaced by something. So in fact, the change we are seeing is in fact an enormous change. If you like, it's changed because this number n did get into the story. And my goal will be to show you that this is actually what happens and not this, by an explicit construction in string theory.
So, yeah. So this is, there are enough of these first pass states to account for the.
So I will show you that there are enough states to make you believe that there is no reason to expect that it doesn't work for all states.
Okay, but so enough to make us believe, or actually enough to.
So for. Okay, so for simple black holes, we have all of them. So what's called a two-charge hole, we have all of them. For three-charge extremal hole, there are arguments now by Bina and Warner that they think they have all of them. But they have not been able to prove that they have all of them. For non-extremal holes, we have only a few states. So in that sense, it's an evolving technology of two. I mean, some years back, we only had the three-charge hole. So in that sense, I'm not going to make a rigorous statement for all black holes, you know, all the states.
So the extent of the mass is n times the string length.
Right.
But the scale of the internal structure of the fuzz ball.
Oh, that's completely messy. So it's not going to be a classical smooth manifold in that place, which is why it's called a fuzz ball. So okay, I'll just show you that in a second. So this is what we'll concretely do, and this is what I claim that we do want to do for the information question. So this again is a live picture of the black hole which we had up there. the knife cartoon. And if you have this, you can see you'll have your usual information problems. So this guy doesn't radiate because extremal, but if you throw something in, it becomes near extremal. At the horizon, again, you'll create pairs and you'll get your radiation coming out. You'll have your problems as before. What we'll do is we'll start with the set of states for some extremal black hole here. There's also an extremal black hole. But we'll take the states now one by one as known in string theory. So we start with the simplest ones, and I'll actually show you that the metric of it actually caps off. We call this capping off. Simple states are capped. I'll take a state which is a little less simple than the simplest one. It'll also be capped, but the cap will be slightly more complicated. I'll go toward more and more complicated states, and I'll see the caps are getting even more and more complicated. Now, if you ask me, do I know the structure of the absolute generic cap? This is what you were asking. Can I write the actual generic cap with all its quantum corrections? I'm not interested, and I'm not going to try to do it. Because at this point, I'm going to say that as far as the information problem is concerned, okay, and this is an important point, now the shoe is on the other foot. If you can actually see that up to the point where you see the states getting more and more messy, they were all capped, and you did not actually generate something like this. If somebody still would like to argue that no, you really, the picture is this, and you still have the information problem because of the fact the full state has many quantum corrections, then in fact now you have to come and show this reverse. So because I'm just trying to solve a paradox here, I have to find some way out of where, some way to show where Hawking's argument could have gone wrong. Once I show you that for the simple state which you can completely reliably make, and then for all the other ones disappearing into more and more complicated directions, as you can see, if the behavior is like this, now there's no obvious paradox left because we only have to find a hole in what Hawking was doing. I'm assuming that we do want to get unitarity and safe quantum mechanics if we can. Well, this is the situation. There's no obvious reason to imagine that there will be some other black hole or some other states of this black hole where you would lose information. That's not to say it cannot happen, but then now you have to show. The paradox is gone. So to recreate the paradox, you have to come back and show me that this mess here actually goes here. Up to first order and all quantum corrections, we have checked it doesn't happen. If you want to claim that with all orders it does happen, then it's up to you.
So this state,
yeah, go ahead.
In which framework you are here, these states are what, states in some dual theory or states living in the space-time?
In the space-time, it's the actual black hole. You go in there,
so you imagine that you have a zero point here.
Yes, I'm going to use.
So there's no space time there. Or
this is my. I'm going to
so
use string theory.
So yeah, to might be more precise. I mean, what is the Hilbert space? What is the precise operators? What's the language that the states are describing?
What are you using as a language? Using frame.
Okay. Let me see if I understand the question. I mean, completely understand this. I'm just going to. What I'm going to do is maybe when I make the states, you can ask me.
Okay. Maybe you can make it.
He does have a theory.
Yeah, the theory I'm going to use is string theory, so there's, I'm not going to. Okay,
but really, to some other drawing is a manifold. Are we supposed to think that there's a classical manifold and then there's some states of strings excited on that manifold?
Right, so if you draw a classical manifold, you should think of this just like we think of the space in this room. It has all its normal Gaussian fluctuations around it. If you want to write a full functional around it, full wave functional, it'll have excitation of all kinds of string fields around it. But it's, when I write something like this, it's no different from writing the metric, you know, in the Earth Moon system or something.
He's actually showing that there's a large number of classical solutions.
Okay.
No, it's very important. I'm not going to tell you that generic black hole solution is anywhere close to classical.
So you're going to make a classical. I'm fine with a classical statement. I'm just trying to understand.
Let me be very clear about what I'm going to do. The generic black hole solution is very quantum and messy. I'll just read this line down after I say this. That's why we call it a fuzzball rather than just a smooth manifold or a metric. You can see the generic state coming as a very nice limit of smooth manifolds. So what will happen is, just going to start with what I wrote down here. The very simple state will have the following structure. Let's look at the state so we can see what actually happened here. So this is the point. Let me start here and then come back to your question. When people try to actually see if they could get some information out of this story, they try to construct hair around this black hole. So how do you construct hair around this horizon? You try to take, let's say, a scalar field and solve the wave equation and try to see if you can maybe stick some degrees of freedom at the horizon. And then you find if you want to make solutions which have a normalizable energy, a bounded energy near the horizon, it doesn't work out. So you find divergence of the energy. So you find that you don't get hair. And when that happened enough cases, people start calling it the no hair theorem. Okay, so that's the standard thing. So if that's what we are going to do, how come this time we end up getting something which actually ends?
it's very difficult to take something which looks like this, has the same mass and charges from infinity, and inside has something which actually behaves very differently. But this is the structure, and this is how it actually works out. This is the matrix I'm showing you. In fact, if you only give me the four dimensions that you see around you, you will not see this structure. But in string theory, you will have some compact dimensions. So let me, for the moment, just assume I have one extra U1, an extra circle. There are others also. For simplest case, only the circle matters. So let me take that. This extra circle which you have sitting over this space, it doesn't sit just as a tensor product over these four dimensions that we see. It actually fibers non-trivially over these non-compact directions. Doing what? Doing at one place making a Kaluza-Klein monopole structure, and at some other place here making an anti-KK monopole structure. It shouldn't make any net KK charge, because from infinity, I didn't put any KK charges. I just had the charges of the Reisner-Nordström black hole. But as you come in here, this extra circle happens in such a way to make a KK monopole here, an anti-KK monopole here, and together with all the other charges this system carries, which are now distributed as fluxes around this KK, anti-KK background, the whole system is completely stable, PPS, time independent, and it's an active state of the full string theory.
So it's a classical solution to equations of supergravity in 10 dimensions.
For this simplest state, that's exactly what it is. Now you.
So when you say it's very quantum, you really mean that quantum corrections may be order one, but we're still talking about quantum corrections to a large number of classical solutions.
Right, so let me make that precise. So the simplest state will look like this. We have just one KK and one anti-KK sitting at a distance, which is of the order of the same diameter as the horizon. It looks very smooth because, you know, KK monopoles are smooth.
And is it stable?
It's completely stable, yes. We have done perturbations around it, but the spectrum is important. I will show it as string of perturbations.
Is it still supersymmetric?
Yes, it's absolutely BPS.
It's a little bit weird, right? I mean, KK and anti-KK.
Because the everything else which isn't there.
Absolutely.
And then, if I take the state which is the next down in complexity, instead of having one KK and one anti-KK, now there are two KKs and two anti-KKs. So you can see I made it a little more complicated just in my cartoon. Okay. And so I can take the next state in string theory and show you it actually looks like that. Okay. The next state will have three sets, four sets. I'm simplifying a little, but basically that's what's going to go on. And then if I go to the generic state, it will have a large number of these sets. What's the number? The number is of the order of the number of charges I put in. So the state becomes so messy because the KK circles have come so close that now I should not ignore the fact that around, even if I wrote a background with one KK and one anti-KK, there were a little bit of fluctuations around anything because when you write the quantum wave particle, there should be some. And so if you take all that into account, there should be quantum corrections, and we are not saying they are not. In fact, they are there. We can estimate, we can just categorize them, which we did. We could check the effect to first order, which we did, but we can't see what they all do to all orders, and we are not even trying. The point is, if this is how the general system is going, we have some kind of data at the end of the throat, but we don't end up getting this. This is all the baggage.
Do the solutions have spherical symmetry?
No, it's very important that none of the solutions are spherically symmetric. In fact, the whole problem arose, thank you for that question, if you take the equations, impose spherical symmetry, and then solve the radial equation, you will always get this solution. The whole point is, this is what you learn by actually starting from string theory, going back to first principles, seeing what they look like at weak coupling, and then moving up. No bound state of deep brains in string theory is actually spherically symmetric. All the brains actually carry spins in half units, and so if you want to make spin zero, it's actually made of two spins pointing this way and that way, and it's not actually spinless, and that's when you get things like this. There's the kind of places where I had some vague connection to what spin networks were doing without discussing in Bojo. We can talk about that separately.
But then the claim that at the classical level, these states are still kind of indistinguishable in some sense.
Right, so here you can easily distinguish them. Once you have many, many of this junk in there, then if you want to distinguish them, you have to work harder and harder to distinguish these guys. So if you have somebody who's falling in very fast and sees only over time scale of 1 microsecond, which is the infall time into a Schwarzschild black hole, okay, he can't tell the difference between too many of these unless you got to a very non-generic one. But on the other hand, the data is there. So if I do a slow, long-term measurement of it, the data is there because it's nothing more than a limit of these charges and anti-charges placed closer and closer to get to the generic state. We know the complete set of these states exhausts all the states of the black hole. Their entropy is complete. We can make the map one-to-one, and you see the map, and then we can come back to these questions.
So again, this is for extreme
level. Right, this is for extreme level. I'll come to the extreme level in a second.
Can you comment? Go ahead. How is it, or how it differentiates itself from the Wheeler bag of gold? The Wheeler bag of gold. So you know that you can take a black hole, and then you know, excise the interior, what's happening, and glue it to another Freeman Thomas worker universe, and blends as many bag of gold as you
yes,
can.
Yes, okay. So I think you mean not actually.
You can construct an infinite number of systems like that, which from the point of view of infinity, we will not be able
yeah.
to.
Often I don't know the answer to that. In fact, I started thinking about it after the talk we had this morning, and I do want to think about it. But I think, okay, that will come once I go off extremality, I guess, because for extremal you probably can't do this, is it? But anyway, I don't know the answer, and I would like to think about it. So it is a good question.
Yeah, there's a recent paper by who's a guy who often had a study. Yeah, but we had a talk like 2 weeks ago.
So,
Let me go on anyway. I don't have an answer to that question, so let me just go on. Okay. So anyway, let's go back to the constructing first of all. How are these things made? And I understand that people here are not generally from string theory, but what you need from string theory actually be very little. So what happens is you take different kinds of charges in the theory. There are, you know, different kinds of brains in the theory. They all carry different kinds of charges under different U1 groups. So if you take N1 units for the first kind of charge, and 2 units for the second kind of charge, and you make a bound state, it has an entropy which goes like the square root of N1, N2. This is the kind of stuff that Ashok Sen did many years ago. And you know, this is very important because the first time one actually ends up seeing that you can really get a large entropy from something microscopic. So the area of the horizon in this case was shown to be the right order and satisfy the potential entropy. If you want to really get a nice big classical horizon, you can take 3 of these kinds of charges together. And then things are really nice because you can now measure the classical horizon area. You can count the brains. This is the work of Stromage and Wafa, which is very nice and very famous. It immediately gets generalized to having 4 kinds of charges, and the story is then very, very similar. So what we do is we start with a particular string theory. This technical words don't matter. It's called type 2B theory. It's in 10 dimensions, N9, 1. We're going to compactify a T4 and an S1. So basically we compactify 5 circles. I labeled one of them as a special S1 because I'm going to use it specially. And what we do is we'll start with the 2 charge state, we take 2 kinds of charges and join them together. So what are these charges? Here are the compact dimensions. T4 is one of my compact things. So it's a 4 torus here, and then S1 is here. One of the charges you have are one-dimensional objects. They're like strings. They're also things called D-strings. They call them D1 brains, but it doesn't matter what they are. They're strings, you can wrap them on the S1. Let's take N1 of them. There are also 5-dimensional sheets called 5 brains. If I wrap them on T4 cross S1, I can take N5 of those. Those are another kind of charge. So what do you mean by kind of charges? If I wrap a string in the compact dimension at this location, from the point of view of the non-compact dimensions, it looks like a point-like charge. In fact, they have mass equal to charge, all these objects in string theory. So when I put these kinds of guys together, I will basically get a guy with mass equal to charge. So if I make a black hole, it will be an extremal black. So now the question would be, it's a very precise question in string theory, if I join N1 of these brains, N5 of these, and these are big numbers, there'll be 1,000 of each, the size of this bound state, they are known to bind, the size of this bound state, is it order L flag, or is it a size which grows with the number of things I put in it times L flag? Very concrete question about string theory. It turned out, this is not the answer, and this is the answer. Yeah.
In this construction, what about the state tells me whether it's actually a black hole? Or something that is, you know, close to being a black hole.
Okay, so right now I haven't shown you that. This was just a cartoon. But I will actually take this, and if you take, for example, these charges, any of these cases, and you try to solve the supergravity equations with this much mass and this much charge, so if the numbers n are big, you do have a lot of mass. You do have a lot of charge, because I'll take the numbers big. If you have a lot of mass and charge at one place, and you solve the equations around it, assuming the charge and mass are in a point-like location, you solve the spherically symmetric supergravity equations, you will get exactly this one. So in that sense, people thought this is a black hole.
Okay, but does it have to be the case? I mean, this construction, does it necessarily have to be a black hole, or can you make it?
So what we'll find in the end is that if you take bound states of charges in string theory, if you again made this what so-called mistake of putting spherical symmetry and solving the equation, you will get this. But when you actually look at the nature of the bound state, you will get this. So in fact, you never get a black hole. If this is what you want to call a black hole, that's not what you get. I mean, you get the fuzz ball instead. That's what you will see. So the statement that we show, the statement is, in string theory, you can take charges You can bind them together. They do what they do. The definite number of bound states you can count by lots of arguments, a certain discrete finite number of states. The question is, what do these states look like? Do they all shrink inside a horizon and a big horizon develops around them? Or do they actually fill up into a big mess and blot out anything like a horizon? And all you get is a kind of fuzz, which might effectively behave like a horizon for some purposes. I'll show you that later. But there is data all the way up to this boundary. That is a sharp question we are trying to answer.
But the state has a horizon either way. What's that what you say?
No, the state, once it becomes like this, it doesn't really have a horizon. You can draw a boundary here and look at that boundary. And what happens if you throw things in here into the fuzz for a generic state, the time after which the data seems to return from here is long. Long in the sense it has a 1 over h bar in it. So to that extent, if you're a classical person, this is the kind of thing I was saying before about informed question. If you're a classical person who wants to do observations on the crossing time, you fall in here, it seems the data has never come back. Because the return time is actually a power of n1, n5 to the power of 1 half. You know the numbers are there also. So then if it takes that long to come back, n1, n5 is like a 1 over h bar, because the number of quanta in the black hole is the mass divided by h bar, in some sense, because the size of each quanta is over h bar. So the return time has a 1 over h bar in it, and so classically you would say it doesn't come back. In that sense, you recover the idea of a horizon. So you fall to a complicated fuzz ball, it takes you much longer time to return. The classical scale separate out. If the classical scale here was order 1, this scale is 1 over h bar.
Just the
1,
I think you're very close to 0 at the bottom.
The GTT, for example, comes close to 0, but doesn't become 0.
Right.
So the horizon never forms, and that's how the no-hair theorem gets by.
The ratio gets,
yeah. Ratio gets large, and large again in the sense of 1 over h bar. It goes like a power of n1, n5.
So there is no horizon, but they're counting those states to reproduce the black hole entropy.
Right. Coupling, of course, gives the black hole entropy, because these states here are known to be counted to give me the black hole entropy. Entropy is right. These are the only states. There are no other states in the theory, because if you take states with those charges, this is an exhaustive count. So it's not like there are some other states which are black holes, and then these states are the ones which are capped. This is all there is. So, okay, let me go. Let me see why these are all there is, and you can ask the question again. Okay. So anyway, this is how the dynamics of this thing is done. You have these D1 brains, which we have taken these strings. You have these D5 brains, which we have taken here. I want to bind them. How do you describe a bound state? It turns out it's very simple. When these guys bind to these, you end up getting something which does behave like a string, but with winding numbers called an effector string, who's still wrapped on this S1, winding around this S1, but winding number is N1 times N5. I don't have the time to show you exactly why this happens, but for the moment, just take it that this is what happens. You can see now that there are many states of this theory. You can take this string with all this large wrapping number and wrap it all up into one long loop which goes round and round and round before closing, and that's one state. On the other hand, you could have broken them all up into separate loops, or loop of winding 3 and loop of winding 2. The total winding is in each case n1 times n5. So now you can see there are many different ways to make states. You get partitions, all different ways you can partition n1 and n5. So if there are k guys of winding, if there are nk guys of winding number k, this thing shows total n1 and n5. Just count all the partitions. You get e to the s states, where s is root n1, n5, and that's where the entropy comes from. So in everything in string theory, the entropy always comes from something very simple. It comes from partitioning a large number into groups. If you do partitions of a large number into different possible groups, the number of states, the number of possibilities is exponential of square root of that number. You take the log to get the entropy, that's where all the entropies in string theory come from.
So you threw this question up, but this is very clear, this is very simple, but ultimately this is an approximate description of a quantum theory, and this is alternatively done from a trace of a density matrix, from a trace of rho,
okay.
Trace of rho log rho of some density matrix in a Hilbert space.
I'm not sure I found a trace, but this is just actually a counting of states. Is that same?
So same thing.
Yeah, okay, just a counting. Yeah.
Okay. But how precisely do you have a description of the Hilbert space, because this is a kind of classical combinatorial counting problem, but it's supposed to be really counting states in the Hilbert space. How
right.
Precisely do you have a description?
Okay, this time it is precise.
Space?
Yeah, this time it's supposed to be very precise, simply because of supersymmetry. So you can take, this is the description which you do at what's called coupling equal to zero. It's called the orbifold point of the theory. And then as you change the...
Right, but that's where the Newton's constant is zero.
That's right.
The right, so that's the... The Strominger-Vaffa thing, but what
that's
you've
right.
been saying is that you know how to describe this when
that's right.
Gene Newton is turned on.
That's not this. That's not this. I haven't done that yet.
But you're going to.
I'm going to. So that's the crucial point. Yeah, this is a review of the old stuff. So what I'm going to do is, because I know this is the actual counting and weak coupling, I'm going to take each of these guys and show you what they actually give at strong coupling. That's the goal. The simplest one will be where all the circles are separate single loops. That's the one which will have the simplest metric which I showed you. The next one will have loops of two different kinds of sizes. It's the next complicated one I showed you. So I'll map all the states on the gravity side to all the states which are counted on this. Okay. I'm in trouble with time, so let me just go on a little bit. And then, so this is sort of a crucial slide for to understand out here. We said we bind these up and we get all these loops and we partition them and, you know, you can count the entropy from there. But it's very important what you can do is these dualities in string theory, and I'm sure not everybody may be familiar with them, but this is what happens. If you do those dualities, these strings wrapped on the circle get converted to just gravitons racing around that circle. And these five brains in the same duality get converted to just strings wrapping that circle. And so the bound state of this and this just becomes the bound state of gravitons running around that circle with strings wrapping that circle. And what does such a bound state look like? Firstly, you should bind all the strings to each other. They become one string wrapped many times around. You should glue the graviton carrying momentum in that direction onto this. And when you glue the graviton onto a string and you look at the bound state, what does that become? It becomes an object which becomes a string, which is actually carrying all the momentum on it. And how does the string carry momentum on it? By actually having traveling waves. So here is a cartoon. If you take a string and you have a string of some length on which you put a certain amount of momentum, P being carried by these gravitons, you can partition the momentum among different harmonics in different ways. Put on the lowest harmonic, on the highest harmonic, some in this harmonic, some in that harmonic. Again, you get a partition problem and you get exactly the same entropy. Of course, under duality, you are supposed to, but here's another way to understand where all the entropy in string theory comes from. It all basically comes from this kind of accounting. And you know, this kind of accounting went way back to the early work Ashok Sen did something, and then Horowitz and company had done something for the non-extremal string, and we know exactly that the string with carrying momentum was played around quite a bit before the free charge story.
Okay, so the Hilbert space is the Hilbert space of excitations of the free string round around the throat.
At zero coupling prototypes.
Well, it's dual at zero, if this is dual to this, we're still at zero coupling, but we're just in a dual space.
Yeah. So, okay, because these are supersymmetric states, if I wanted, I can still label them as this and move the coupling around because I can follow the state as I move the coupling.
Right, but the Hilbert space of interest is the Hilbert space of free strings wrapped around the throat of this classical geometry.
Not of free strings. The Hilbert, okay, the final thing of interest to me are these states, but when the gravitational constant has been made bigger.
Fine, but zero coupling is free strings.
And zero coupling is free strings. Still helps me to count, which is all I was showing here.
Fine, okay.
But what I want is the states at strong coupling. That's why this doesn't solve my problem. Yes.
So, but, I mean, you were talking about classical solutions earlier on. I mean, at finite coupling, I mean, presumably you're going to tell us that there are wave functions on some YDY space classical solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything will be a wave function.
Okay, so there's no question of principle about the Hilbert space here, as far as I understand.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any question of principle. I just want to show you what they look like. Let me just go through a little bit quicker because I haven't gotten through that much of it. So the whole point is if the string was carrying momentum while being straight, it would make something which from the non-compact point of view would look like a point mass, and you might get something which looks like the Nye black hole because you have to solve a spherically symmetric equation. But here's the beauty of it. There's actually no way to put momentum on a fundamental string while keeping it spherically symmetric. And that's because a string does not actually admit any longitudinal vibrations. The fundamental string only has transverse vibrations in string theory, so you have to bend the string in a transverse direction. The simplest thing you could do, for example, is make it take one turn of a uniform helix. I just open it up to its covering space, because I actually wrapped many times around that circle. In the actual physical space, you know, I identify up to different distances, so the whole thing looks like a slinky going around like this and comes back and joins. So it's not sitting at a point, it automatically spreads over some region, and now if I want to find the metric produced by a string, which has many strands which are spread over a slinky, it turns out there's a way to write the metric of this when G Newton is turned on. You can superpose the metric produced by each strand. What you end up finally getting is flat space far away. There's a kind of a throat. There's a complicated region like this. This is where the string strand is running. I'll show you this metric explicitly in a moment. But you don't actually get the naive metric. You can see why there's never any spherical symmetry. If you derive this back to the D1, D5 system I started with, you get the simplest case where all these loops are single loops. And in fact, in that case, the duality factor is something very smooth. This region looks like a part of ADS3 cross S3 cross T4. there's a neck, it goes back to flat space. Here for this part, this state out of all the D1, D5 states, this is the answer, and that's it. So we have taken, just one second, we have taken one explicit state of the D1, D5 system, a very simple state because I made all the loops equal. All the other states just have loops of different sizes. I'll tell you what to do for them. For this guy, this is what you got, this is not what you get, and on this, you just can't do it. This is what you get, it's an absolute derivation. Okay. So once one state is gone, it doesn't look like this. Now you have to ask, do you really think the other states will make black holes? I'll show you for this case, none of them will. Okay. Yeah.
So I'm a little bit confused about what you said. You said that there's no state which is spherically symmetric about the transverse rotation group of the single.
Yeah, you can see that from here. There's no way to put spherical symmetry on.
Sure, no question. But I mean, you can combine two strings, and there are L equals zero states in the Hilbert space.
Okay, you have to make. I can get total L equal to zero. It's very interesting. I can make half the string go clockwise, the other half go anti-clockwise. Total angular momentum will be zero. It doesn't mean that the state becomes spherically symmetric. It's very important. Half the string goes this way, half the string swings this way. L is equal to zero. I do want L equal to zero states. On the other hand, the thing hasn't collapsed to a point in the transverse direction. There's no way to put L equal to zero and somehow make the string sit at a point. If you're going to wander around, it can wander around clockwise and wander around anti-clockwise. It has still swelled up. Once it swells up, my horizon is gone. That's what happens.
So what is sort of counteracting the gravitational well?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Because the string is actually moving, it's very interesting. If you look at a string, it is happening for the same reason. If you take an open string and you let it rotate, why is the string not shrinking? Each part of the string is actually shrinking at all times. But because the string is moving, each place keeps replacing the next place. So if you actually take the string, each point on the string is actually moving in a way which makes it look like a half BPS object. Okay, I can show you.
So it's the angular momentum, that's the angular.
It's not the total, then yeah, net angular momentum can be zero.
Local momentum.
Each piece is just moving.
Yes.
Nothing is standing. The whole thing is time independent because one piece is being replaced by the next piece. That's the complete structure. So what I want to emphasize is here there is no choice. In the two-charge system, two-charge extremal system, you know all the states, you can count all of them, we count the entropy, there are no other bound states of the system. For all of them, what you will get is just the metric produced by a string. None of them are spherically symmetric. You can see what they look like. They don't make a horizon, they make this. Just because I'm out of time, let me just quickly skip and tell you, if I took a generic one with arbitrary sizes, we can do something and write down a metric. I have no time to describe to you what it is, but if I took a generic guy, for all those guys, this is what a solution looks like. The metric is not trustworthy when the number of these pieces become more and more, but that's in the same sense that you have too many of these sources too close to each other. It doesn't mean you're getting a horizon. Okay. So you go show that everything is like gaps. Okay, let me just skip over all this. Actually, this one is important. This finite, it's a finite system you have. The whole strings have a finite total length. So the excitation spectrum actually is discrete. There has to be an energy gap in a finite system in a finite volume. Once you see that these things are capped, you can try to see what's the lowest energy excitation you can make for this, and turn out exactly agreeing energy with the energy excitation which you get for this discrete system. In fact, if you actually had the infinite throat, you would get a mismatch because as a bound state would have a finite energy gap, and the whole infinite throat would have no energy gap. So in fact, you had to have the gaps. Not only do you have to have them, they cover exactly the right depth in each case to give you the right energy gap. Now the last thing about these gap things is, if you take the generic cap size, and try to see how big is the boundary of this fuzzy area where the string was moving around. If you do the area of that boundary and divide by g, it turns out you get the right order of the entropy. So somehow this thing is fuzzing out to a size which is of the order which is given by the Bekenstein formula. We would love to know why that is, but we don't know. It's a very important thing to understand. But roughly speaking, the reason is all down to phase space. In any theory of quantum gravity where you can actually see the states, the states are all going to be orthogonal to each other. You can't make too many states orthogonal to each other if you force them to sit at a point. Okay? So in fact, because this just came from a vibrating string, if you just go and see where the phase space degrees of freedom are, if you want to hold that many degrees of freedom, there's a minimum spreading that they have to do. And somehow, for reasons we can't directly understand why, but if you observe the states, because now you can make them, they swell up to the Bekenstein size. And these things may carry on to more general theories of gravity. The phase space is what swells you up, and the black hole just optimal compression of things. Okay, the three-charge black holes, I have no time, I'll just skip over all these slides. Three-charge black holes, again, you can make very simple states. You can see them explicitly what they look like. What they look like are just, again, they have these things like gaps in a gate, special explicit states of three charges. This is what they look like in cartoons. Three charge means what? You had whatever you had before, plus some momentum mode running here. This is one of the Schrödinger-Wafer states. There's a generic Schrödinger-Wafer state, a specific Schrödinger-Wafer state. Here's it written down. Here's what it looks like. It's gap. Okay. So it's that specific. You just take the states one by one with the external black hole, show you exactly what they look like. And that's it. Kill the whole thing if you want to stare at it. People made loads of these cases by now. And in each case, you find exactly that structure. I was saying the Kurzweil monopoles, they're held apart by fluxes which run on the spheres. S2 is between Kurzweil monopoles. It's a stable system. This is a non-extremal thing I was telling you about before, where some work which Rob Weisenhorn did was pretty useful. Same thing for non-extremal mode, you would expect to get a horizon, blah, blah, blah. If first of all ideas were correct, you would expect to get these kind of gaps. On the microscopic side, what does it look like? You again have the string wound around, but now excitations can go both ways on the string, and you know they can even collide and come off like Hawking radiation. Take a simple state where you have equal amount of momentum on each particular state. For that, the dual is known. It was made by these people. Here it is. There's no horizon. It's gapped.
Coming back to this finite, non-extreme case. So is there such a notion as sort of what you call a generic state of the ensemble? So in principle, you would take, because now the thing has a temperature or not. Right. At least the black hole would have a temperature.
Right. So, okay, so this I guess I'm saying the same thing that you know from before very well, right? You just put the left and right movers on this into Boltzmann distributions. So that's the generic state.
And that state would still look like the thing above?
Yeah, so if you put this into the generic thermal state here, I'm expecting this, the nice spherically symmetric solution would suggest this, right?
Yeah, so if it's, the thing is, right, once it becomes sort of a generic state, the thing is that if I would make a thermal ensemble of all these states,
right,
it would be rotationally symmetric, at least by that time. It
right. If I get to superpose all the states with each other, that's very boring. Come back to that and tell you something about that. But these are one state at a time. To solve the information problem, we're looking at what does one black hole which I made there by throwing something in look
right.
like. That guy has no spherical symmetry. That guy always like this.
So, but even if I would take a generic state, because
absolutely take a generic
for something to have, even for a few state can have
yeah.
a temperature.
Right.
At least by just being a generic,
absolutely.
Sufficiently generic state in an ensemble. And you would claim that thing would actually have a corresponding classical geometry associated with it?
Well, no, so the classical geometry, again, if it's a generic state, it would cease to be classical for exactly the reason I gave before. It would be a limit of classical things where the poles of KK monopoles and anti-KK monopoles are so close that their fluctuations completely mess them with each other. But the data...
There wouldn't even be a classical state necessarily.
No, you should not write it as a classical state at all. Absolutely.
Superposition.
It's nowhere close to a classical state. You have, we sort of listed all the kind of fluctuations you can get. You can get string fluctuations, you have brains wrapping cycles, the brains wrapping T4 which give effective strings, you get their alpha prime effects. There are a lot of effects. The only important thing to note is you do not get a region which is a horizon with vacuum around it. There is always data at the end of the field. That's the only important thing.
But still,
it's not the nature of the data, it's not classical data.
I could still derive things about that generic state by doing semi-classical calculations in that.
Hopefully what you can do, and this is what one would expect, is that if you want to do short-term processes like the infall of an observer, heavy object falling in, you can try to somehow coarse grain over the great complexity of monopole, anti-monopole pairs there, and say you just go over it. I was going to show you that in my last slide, what can be done about that, but I probably won't get to it. But you can do that and see, okay, they all behave almost the same. It might behave like this classical guy, though I don't know that for sure. The important thing is for the Hawking radiation to a slow, long-term process, if you don't have vacuum near the horizon, but any quantum mess, I don't need to know the details, the argument of Hawking doesn't work anymore.
I can believe that when I start asking sort of detailed questions about information or whatever, microscopic. But if I would ask macroscopic questions...
That's exactly what... You're absolutely right. For macroscopic questions, the hope would be that this kind of would be a good effective approximation for any of the generic states. Like I shoot a bullet through this room, I describe the whole thing by just a viscosity. If the state is very non-generic, like all the atoms are going this way, it doesn't work. But for generic states, it works. You actually want to know where the atoms are, do an X-ray diffraction pattern, take your week.
Is there no energy density associated with all these pulses? Or this monopoles?
For generic pulses? We tried to do that a little bit, and I can explain that to you later for the two-charge extremal ones, where we know all of them. Okay. For a generic state, it may not be the best way to ask the question because all stringy modes are excited. So I'm not so sure that the metric itself or the average metric is a good thing to look at.
No, but there's still the semi. There should still be the semi-classical description. You're saying it will look like a vector.
For fast processes, this is the important thing. For fast processes, it might behave like the vacuum. For the slow process of Hawking radiation, because it's not the vacuum state, there's no problem. So this distinction between fast and slow processes somehow becomes very important.
Well, yeah, even in the semi-classical chamber, this is slowly distributing energy across the horizon.
That's right.
That balances the Hawking radiation.
That's right. But,
okay,
but, I can
but
see
if you don't take such a, that's asking to take many, many.
Right. Long time.
Light crossing times.
That's right, exactly.
But if we stick to, say, one light crossing time,
right. Even
at that
even
scale, there's no energy density associated with all of this activity that's going on, all these fuzzy things.
Okay, let's talk about it. I don't have a clean answer, so maybe I'll just discuss that in person. Okay, can try to do that. Anyway, all I was saying was there's just a one line statement here. For one particular state like this, where you make all the strings equal, put equal momentum left and right. We know the dual metric, we know the actual metric it produces, it looks like this, it doesn't look like this. So again, the same story going on, here is the metric, and here's what is interesting. When these excitations of this collide and this noise stream of state radiates, we have known for a while, back from the mid-90s, that that radiation rate from this microstate exactly agrees in all its properties with the Hawking radiation from the near extremal hole. Of course, every microstate radiates a little bit differently, so if we apply the same emission process to a special state whose metric I just showed you. If I compute emission rate, I get some answer because they are all like peaked at all the same length and so on. You'll get emission specific frequencies like a laser, like peak at special frequencies. Because I did that, I forcibly make it peak at special frequencies. The frequencies are some particular values. But turns out this particular metric here, as was shown by Myers and company here, it turns out this metric is actually unstable. It is unstable in the sense this particular metric is unstable. It has an ergo region actually emits by ergo region emission. You can compute the frequencies of that ergo region emission, and they exactly agree to the frequencies of CFT. The imaginary parts of the frequency gives the rate of radiation, and they agree with exactly the radiation we expect here. So this is what was Hawking radiation for the CFT state, because for a generic state, this is what you got as exactly agreeing with Hawking's semi-classical answer. But now we're going state by state. We see how much emission this state was supposed to give by the same calculation. It exactly agrees this time. The information, the radiation is not something coming out of pairs being pulled out of a vacuum. It's actually, you can see whether it's just coming, there's instability, it has some frequencies, you solve the whole wave equation, down to the last 2 pi, you get back to the same emission. So for this set of very non-generic microstates, as given by the whole big page of formula there, you can explicitly see information carrying Hawking radiation, and this radiation is what you would call the Hawking radiation for these very non-generic microstates. I think I'm basically out of time, I just maybe 3 minutes before I completely end. So I'll just say this, just tell you what the questions are without telling you the details. So we can often ask, okay, that's what you say about black holes. We have done time-independent black holes. I think there seems to be no obvious way now that one can argue that a time-independent black hole states should actually have a horizon with no data. So again, just to summarize what we have said is, the states you make always have data up to the horizon. There's no what I call data-free horizon there. If that is the case, the Ocean Hawking argument doesn't go through. And that's the sense in which Fuzzball solved the information paradox. But now you can ask dynamical questions. Suppose a shell is collapsing in under its own gravity, at some point passes through the horizon. Does it at some later time equilibrate to a Fuzzball? If it doesn't, of course, then you know the radiation starts all, what would it mean? And why is that a puzzling question? Because once the shell goes through its horizon, you know the light cones would tend to go inwards. And how would something, you know, what should happen after this? And here, I'll give you two simple estimates here, maybe just one if I don't have time for the second. The interior of the black hole, this particular picture we had here, might be a lot more quantum than we thought. This might be a lot more quantum than we thought for the following reason. Let's just take the amplitude to tunnel from this state to a fuzzball state. We have all these fuzzball states here, they are the time independent states. This guy, if we take the amplitude for this collapsing shell, to tunnel to something like this. Sounds like an absurd thing to say because if you have a macroscopic object, tunnel to another macroscopic configuration, the amplitude will be there but will be very small. In fact, you can compute the order if everything is order gm in length, you find the action for tunneling is e to the minus gm squared. It's actually a very small number. On the other hand, so there's the calculation that you want to see. The number of states that you can tunnel to For a black hole, it's actually very large, because the whole thing about a black hole is that the number of states, the entropy, is actually surprisingly high for a given mass, and that turns out to be a number like this, which is exactly such that it can compensate a number like this. So it's quite bizarre that while you might have thought this thing is very classical, there's no reason for this guy to turn into something else. The number of states you have to turn into here are such that if you take the number of states you turn into multiplied by the amplitude turn into any one of them, they seem to compensate. So if you want to make a toy quantum mechanical model for this, if I put a particle in a box, it can turn into any neighboring box, but the amplitude is very small, but the number of boxes is very, very large. So the number of smallness compensates the largeness, and you just solve this quantum mechanical problem, you find time of order unity, the wave function spreads over all of them. Okay. It's just to say that there are more quantum things going on in the black hole than you might at first think. Can we estimate the time of this a little better? That was
this
my second
precise statement, because it obviously depends very sensitively on the pre-coefficient of your.
Absolutely. It's not a precise statement. Yes. The truth is all over the place, right? Yeah.
So, whatever, if we are now inside a black hole, suppose we are inside a gigantic black hole.
Okay.
We should turn into a fuzzball. Is that.
You can turn into a fuzzball or whatever.
But we have this probability unity.
Let me just finish it. I just a couple of slides, because I'm already at 5:59, so to sharply end it. So let me just end with a couple of slides and come back on.
In your picture, it would be the final singularity that would be replaced with the fuzzball.
Right, so instead I'm not finding either a singularity, and the singularity can just be there in the sense of things, the fuzz gets a little denser towards the center, but it's not like the usual singularity. But the important thing for me is not the singularity, it's the fact that there's no data-free horizon.
Oh, sorry, the fuzz replaces the horizon, not the singularity.
Yeah, there's data near the horizon, what you thought was the horizon, that's the bottom line.
So in this picture, we can't be inside a black hole, because by the time we try to...
But if you're falling in, you could turn into this. Into
yes.
This is the last thing I want to show you here.
We can't cross the fuzz without going through a Planck scale curvature.
So any questions you ask about dynamics, for most of them, my answer will be, I don't know. Okay, we just start playing with this.
Okay.
Just give me 1 minute to finish this, and then I'll come and tell you anything I know about dynamics. So if you want to see what tunneling is, just back to quantum mechanics, tunneling is just actually going out of phase. If you actually have a particle in one well, you can write it as a superposition of the symmetric state and the antisymmetric state. They have slightly different energies, symmetric plus antisymmetric. And so they evolve at slightly different rates. And when the phase of this and this go exactly pi out of phase, instead of being here, the guy comes here. So it's just a kind of dephasing, when the energy gap between these causes them to go out of phase with each other. Okay? We can estimate how long it takes the fuzzballs to go out of phase with all the fuzzball states to go. So it's collapsing shell, because the fuzzballs were all the states you can make in that region. The state of the shell must be some awful linear combination of these guys. A time-dependent state is always a linear combination of the time-independent eigenstate. So I've written that here. But because this guy is going to collapse to inside a Schwarzschild radius, it must have an uncertainty in its momentum at least bigger than 1 over the Schwarzschild radius. That implies some uncertainty in the energy, so the fuzzballs I have to use to make a time-dependent shell will have some spread in the energies, as the defacing time over which they go out of phase will have to be like 1 over delta E. If you just run through the numbers, which I don't have time for right now, it turns out it's exactly the combination which corresponds to the evaporation which appears here. So you always dephase in a time which is much shorter than peak evaporation. So I think that's just a consistency check. If these things could tunnel into fuzzballs, we just shown the amplitudes are right that they could. But if the time was so long that it didn't happen before Hawking evaporation time, we still haven't solved anything because the data would just go out from this temporary model just created and so on. But because it happened in a time much shorter than the evaporation time, it can still solve your problem. What are the following observer field? I'm out of time, so I won't tell you much. It's just a question of what he feels. We try to make a model of this. We said there's an ergo region in there in the simplest case. In more complicated cases, you expect more complicated ergo regions. We try to make a model. This is really my last slide of this talk, the summary slide. If we try to make a region which has kind of random behavior inside the fuzzball, but has ergo regions going to the right here and to the left here. Okay? And then in this kind of situation, you get this emission from ergo regions, which actually is exactly like the emission we already got from the specific microstrips we've done. So we know they behave like this. So we have a metric which actually emits, but if you have infalling quanta whose wavelength is much larger than this typical scale of granularity of the fuzzball, they just go in without noticing anything. We are not completely happy with this. We are not completely sure what this shows, but this sort of behavior here is like that of a glass. In a glass, you have randomness at a very short order. So if a light wave is coming in, you start wondering, what is this guy doing? Will it completely scatter into pieces? But the wavelength is much longer than the local separation between things. The glass is actually transparent. That's why you can see through the spectacles you might be wearing. So that kind of calculation, which is done in these old papers, starting back with the work of Dyson. So if you have a random sort of lattice here, you sort of want to make a situation where you can still get emission of order one, and infalling guys still don't see anything. Okay, we're just playing with this. If you have questions, please ask me later. Let me skip all my summary. For most of these states now, the duals are understood. This is the general picture we have for emissions. We expect this to go for all these cases. And there's my last slide. The model is that instead of quantum effects happening at scale LP, when you make bounds at a large number of quanta, they go up here. The black holes all change character, and it at least solves the information paradox. Dynamical questions, we are just starting.
Any more questions?
So for the finite temperature case, so when it would be getting closer and closer to the tip of the Gauss law, there are pretty, in both cases, I guess, pretty large redshifts still being.
Yeah, even for extreme order, redshifts go to, for the electric one goes close to zero. But, no,
but the reason I'm talking about finite temperature is also because the then if I would look at the corresponding semi-classical geometry, there would even be semi-classically some Hawking radiation in this situation as well. I don't need to have a horizon to really have Hawking radiation.
I think that is interesting because what you seem to be getting as you go to the more generic state is that as you get closer and closer to the generic state, near the horizon, these things are very violent. You have an, like what I've drawn here, this is our guess for what will happen. You have an ergoregion is just a place where there's a killing vector which was time-like at infinity, force itself to become space-like. Suppose here it was space-like pointing this way, like that's the top line there with the arrow going this way, and right nearby it's actually facing the other way. So on a very rapid scale, the guy is changing direction, and that region is nowhere like what you thought the vacuum was. So in a way, the black hole is holding itself up instead of everything going in by the light cones for the same reason we talked about before for the extremal hole. Why does a string, you might think an elementary open string, would always shrink to a point because it has tension. How come an elementary string can have a finite size and keep a finite size? Because the guy is always bubbling and moving, and so it never falls in. Okay? So that's what is happening here also. When you have ergo regions, there's no time-independent slicing. It's very interesting, all the non-extremal holes, states you make, they are either time dependent or they have an algorithm. You cannot slice them by a time independent method. There is no solution like that. Can you consider? If you could actually, but you're never idiot. Because if you have time independent slicing, you can make a vacuum wave function which would be the lowest downshift in your time. But they always have an algorithm. And for that reason, you cannot use your normal intuition. Why don't things fall in or what will happen? An algorithm is a place which you can slice by space like slicing, but then it will always be time dependent. Or you can make a time-independent slicing, but then it's not space-like everywhere. And I think that holds a lot of key to it. And the ergoregions are very violent in the sense that they are very rapid on very small scales. So what's happening in there completely is nowhere near what you expect for the ordinary vacuum state. The black hole is holding itself up as if it was a very violent string, in a very rough analogy. Take a big excited state of an elementary string. It doesn't shrink to a point because of what it's doing. And has large number of states. Not a generic state, but it's doing something, and that's why it's holding itself up. It's wiggling around very rapidly. I think that's a rough analogy to what I think is happening.
What would then be the meaning of Hawking's derivation?
It's a really good question. There must be some simple reason why both these things work, neither of which I know the answer to. Why does the boundary of the first ball come out to have an area which is given by such a simple Bekenstein law? And secondly, why is Hawking's derivation correct? There must be some universality towards what is going on. I have some crude ideas about it. We can chat about that after the talk. But both these things need to be understood because all we have done right now is shown the string theory does this. We need to understand why does it do this to be able to carry the lessons out and use it to other theories and so on.
Can you say something about the distribution of these fuzz balls? Earlier I was suggesting if this picture would work, it should migrate towards the horizon.
Yes.
Do you see the way your pictures, they look sort of uniformly distributed?
Yeah, no, I remember that question from your talk that the brains should somehow move to the outside. In a sense, that is what has happened, that if you make a bound state of brains, these bound states, as you increase the coupling, they swell up. That's basically what is happening. And they always swell up in a way that they never actually end up falling inside what you would have thought would be the horizon size at any coupling. So normally people thought as you increase the coupling, the gravitational radius would increase, size of the object would remain order Planck length or string length or something. So of course you would have to get a horizon. It's the other way around. As you increase the g, and that you can see from elementary computations, which are much before this, actually making the balls, they actually swell up with g in the right ratio, so they wouldn't make a horizon. In that sense, the waves are migrating to what would have been the horizon.
But are they leaving a sort of empty space in between?
No,
they're filling. They're completely.
They are filling up. They are filling up. I don't see empty space inside. I don't see empty space inside. Because you can see the simplest case was just that of a string vibrating, right? That's the actual two-charge system. You can make all the states of a string which is doing its vibrations with complete gravity thrown in. And it doesn't leave it empty. In fact, the density slowly increases towards the center in a profile which actually we did work on. It's like 1 over r squared plus a squared to some power 3.
Yeah, but I would like to come back to this case, what Sue and Rims calls the monsters. So the solution
yes,
is like matter just on the verge of forming a black hole.
Right.
And then inside the Einstein Bosn bridge, if it's homogeneous, you can glue back any Friedmann or Bosn universe or another. An origin like that, and then you can continue forever. So you really the problem at this is the classical problem. The problem at the classical level is what it tells you is that.
Just one second, can I just stop you there before I forget this part of the question? I did look into the monster story, but there's one curious thing about monsters. There's a whole also argument there that you can't easily make the monster. That's
so
the
it's
the
yeah,
cancer,
yeah. So they're
right?
saying like
yeah.
yeah, if you try. Yeah, so there's
a problem of what's the pre-state of the monster, so you can't make it. And
okay, so that's
the closest I know.
Maybe that's a problem. As a set of possible solutions of your theory, the problem is that usually you have way more classical solution than the area entropy. That's what the monster thing that I can put in.
No, that's right.
There. So whatever you're doing, at some point in this first proposal, you need to have a mechanism that prevents this monster from coming. So having enough states seems to be easy,
yeah.
right? But the problem is that if you start to go along this proposal, then we have way too many states. So the problem is how do you, what is the principle mechanism that excludes?
That's right. And I have to understand better what, for example, happened in the also we saw in the talk in the morning. If you can glow a whole universe inside and you can keep arbitrary amount of entropy inside.
Yes.
That's what I'm asking is do you actually violate energy conditions somewhere? But if you don't do any of that,
that's
something you need to understand.
It's perfectly
I think the statement was you don't violate any energy
conditions.
Perfectly safe. Okay, but again, dynamically, if you can't make it. Yeah, if you have a second boundary or something, then this doesn't make sense to you. This is sort of all we're saying here, the black hole is just like ordinary objects. Throw something in, if you can make it that way.
No, only one, it's integration. You can just make this other guy inside as big as you want and put whatever you want inside.
Okay, no, I would have to think about it. I don't do much for monsters. All I remember was there was a difficulty in making it. Yeah, there was difficulty in making monsters. For non-extremal holes, you have to understand that there is no sharp distinction between where a hole ends and ordinary systems begin. Because now, from what we have seen here, a black hole is nothing more than just another state of matter, just complicated states of brains. So if you have an Earth and a Moon system, some people also use language, but an Earth-Moon system, that's sort of not qualitatively different from a black hole now. Black hole is just some messy state, you can put pieces put outside, make it orbit around, and so on. So the sharp distinction between what you want to call satellites or black hole states or monsters, you have to a little bit be more careful in saying what you mean. All that is being said here is that you cannot actually compress matter to create a horizon and have it stay that way for a long time, it will tunnel out. You cannot actually create a horizon. The only thing one is fighting with here is people thought singularities were bad in some way and should be removed by censorship. String theory is telling us horizons don't happen. If they can happen temporarily, but then you can tunnel out to them immediately. If you can time independent states for the extremal holes, there's pretty much no room left. They never make the horizon. The states are like that. So for non-extremal holes, we are only extrapolating, right? Because we have only a few states. But if I extrapolate based on what we have seen from the extremal holes and the few states we know for non-extremal, if you allow me to extrapolate, I would have to say the horizons don't stay. And that seems to be the lesson here. What happens inside of all, okay, there are many interesting dynamical questions. You can see how little we know about dynamics here right now.
Can we go back to where you had the two charge? Well, the only one you showed us in any detail was the two charge cases,
right.
And you had all these strings winding around.
Right.
Well, at least in one of the two dual pictures.
Right.
And you associated entropy just with different ways of partitioning the strings into small pieces.
That's right. Yeah.
Into substrings. But what about, I mean, if we had a box of gas, there's an entropy associated with the locations of the molecules. What about an entropy associated with moving the different strands of strings around?
Yeah, so I think...
And now, is it that their separation is fixed? Is it? Can you argue that their entropy is smaller? Or what?
No, the point is these
do we have to ignore that entropy?
Yeah, that has an immediate answer. Because this one is, these are supersymmetric states, right? If I take two of the strands and make them have a relative motion like this,
yes.
That is extra energy for no net charge. Those excitations are all there once you go off PPS.
Well, I'm not saying that they move, but they're just located in different places.
Oh, no, because PPS, because all they all go to zero momentum wave function, right?
Yes.
Because if I put, so they're all smeared over, so they're in a, they're not, they're all actually glued inside this T4. I mean, the strands are just being drawn like loops, but they're all glued inside a photolus. The non-compact direction to the photo, it's a bound state, right? So they can't just float free. It's very important you have a bound state of these strings.
Yes.
Okay? So they can't float free of each other.
So they're bound to each other? I mean,
they are bound to each other.
So their relative positions are fixed.
Right. There's a whole wave function which tells you what the whole structure is. We don't want to do unbound states, because unbound states of these charges corresponds to two black holes, right? You want to count all the degeneracy which you are trying to count is the number of bound states of some charges which corresponds to one black hole. So those degrees of freedom are not there. You can take two different black holes and do what you want with them. But the actual supersymmetric states of one black hole, they don't have the degree.
The single black hole dominates entropically anyway, right? So
no, that's right. That's right. So it's not like I want the other ones right now. But just as a technical point, it's very important that the bound states are the guys who have this size. Because bound states swell up. Unbound states, anyway, if you put two objects near each other because they have some wave function, there's a disperse, right? Wave function just spread. But wave function spreading, they'll just leave. The bound states, people thought once they are bound, they'll have a size typically Planck length, string length, no scale in the theory. It's not true. If you have a large number n, the scale could have been Planck length or n times Planck length. That is where the point was. And just because these states have a high degeneracy, they can't be small. If the degeneracy is 1 million, you need at least 1 million Planck units to hold all those wave functions. That's why the guy is swelling up, and the horizon always gets blotted out. And the size to which it swells up by just degeneracy of orthogonal wave functions is the Bekenstein bound for some of the reasons.
And another somewhat related question, which is, you say that once this would-be horizon forms, you're tunneling to a plausible. And the reason is there's so many available states.
That it can.
So why are these states not available just before it makes the horizon?
Oh yeah, no, that's very interesting. It sort of looks like a neck. I have discovered this in one of my review articles. When your degrees of freedom are very far away, there's a lot of phase space because a lot of volume at infinity. As they come in closer, let's say to r equals 10m, there's not that much phase space. If you come in even further down to r equals 2m and inside, then these bound states have a huge amount of phase space. So somehow if you look at your phase space, there's sort of a narrow neck in between. There's a lot of space at infinity and there's a lot of space inside once they are close in. But there are no first balls, there are very few first balls which are as big as 10m. So if you actually look at the bound state, there are a lot of bound states with sizes between 0 and 2m. There are almost no bound states with sizes between 6m and 10m. And if you disperse the particles to infinity, of course you have a lot of phase space from just separately throwing the particles away. So you go through a neck in the phase space, and so it's like you go through a metastable state and now you're here. So that's why the black hole is sort of metastable. It has to turn to this neck to go out where the particles disperse. And okay, so that there's nothing, it's just ordinary static after this. But it's interesting, there's a little neck in between, which is why the black hole can't immediately break into pieces and the fuzz ball becomes bigger breaks.
I'm wondering why you don't form these fuzz balls even before the horizon.
Oh, you mean just before? You don't mean at 10m, you mean just before. You might, I don't know what
to say. I don't know. Yeah, no, let's say at 10m.
Okay, so at 10m, you would probably tunnel into a fuzz ball which is also size of the order of 10m. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
But there are almost no fuzz balls of size 10m because they try to make all these states.
But they're not, you mean? Because their energy is too high, is that what
you're saying? Right, see, these are bound states, right? Bound states.
Yeah, but bound states can be large.
True, they can, but they have certain sizes.
You have
right?
This immense.
You have a large number,
phase
but.
Phase coming from the entropic
pressure. The number of bound states which have size 10m is very few. It's when you get to size 2m that the generic one comes, right? So at 10m, there are some states, but they are very few. So the energy is too much, entropy is too low, and the cancellation doesn't happen. That's what I'm saying. the cancellation of the tunneling amplitudes with the number degeneracy doesn't happen at 10m. It happens at 2m.
No, I think I'm asking a dynamic question. What if it's not a dynamic?
It could happen at 10m. I mean, we don't know anything, obviously. This is just estimates. So.
Okay, I think we close here. So we can all go for dinner. Thanks again.